This is a warning. I repeat, this is a warning. Your brain may explode from listening to this show. We will not be held responsible if it does. What are you going to do about it anyway? You won't have a head. You've been warned. And now, welcome to the Racer X Podcast Show with Steve Mathis.
To a Racer X podcast by Steve Mathis. I swear I've still yet to ever listen to one.
All right, welcome to the Racer X podcast, none other than number 19, Connecticut legend, motorcycle legend, Doug Henry. Doug, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, I've gotten a lot of requests. I think you're the third highest guy behind McGrath and Jason Lawrence as far as who people want to hear from. So thanks.
I guess it's nice to be wanted to be heard from. I don't know what I have to say. Hopefully, I'll have something interesting.
I'm sure you
will. I think I do, actually. I've been playing around quite a bit here, so go ahead.
Well, good, good. And I guess the first question I have right off the bat, what have you been up to? What's going on in Doug Henry's life?
Well, that's the thing that's kind of keeping me been really excited about. I actually just started riding a motocross bike again.
I heard that, yeah.
Yeah, so I got a chance to ride it once before the X Games, and I thought it was really good because I was able to relate to the adaptive event they had on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
It was just something that I've wanted to do. I've been snowmobiling. Over the winter, I've been snowmobiling quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Yamaha Nitro, like RTX. It's the rough terrain, sort of snowcross version of a snowmobile.
Yep.
And I just run a Velcro strap across my lap, and away I go. It's really easy. It's electric start. It's got reverse. I studded it up, and it works really good. And I was excited this winter, and then summertime came, and it's like, you know, I got to do this in the summertime. I need something to do in the summertime. So I talked to Yamaha, and I got a WR 450, and I got some YZ parts for the 450, and so I have I'm going to call it a WRZ 450, a Yamaha. So, but it's really fun. I've been out three times so far, and hoping to go back out again tomorrow on it.
Is it kind of like a Ricky James setup? We've all seen him ride on his CRF. Is it kind of like that?
It's similar, but I went a little bit further with crash bars. I actually put on sort of like a hoop that goes over my head.
Uh-huh.
If I go over the bars, it protects me from any impact on my head or my back or anything like that. So
right.
It's been tested. It works pretty good, and I just hope I don't ever have to test it again.
What's it like being back on a bike?
It's really fun. It was scary at first. It was just so different. I felt like I didn't have that balance. I've been riding, quads and rhino. I have a rhino and a grizzly and snowmobiles. And all of those, your body leans and the machine stays flat. So when I got onto the motorcycle, I felt odd. I really felt off because it seemed like the bike was straight up and I was hanging off the bike.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of throwing the bike down and being on top of the bike, it was just kind of felt weird the first day, I guess. It just felt really weird. I kind of picked it up. I started changing some stuff on the bike, feel a little bit looser, I guess, because you get strapped to the bike, and I felt like I was strapped to the bike too tight.
Mm-hmm.
So I loosened up on that, and it enabled the bike to kind of fall a little bit more in the corners. So the jumping part of it is really—it's really fun. It's fine with the jumping. It just seemed like the corners when you had to lay the bike down. That's where I was struggling the most.
I can just imagine you're probably pushing it too.
Yeah, I'm going to go as fast as I can no matter what.
Yeah, exactly.
I did sort of ease into it a little bit. The first day I actually rode out in my field and just tried to get used to the shifting and the braking and the clutch. Rekulus makes an automatic clutch, and I have that in there. And it's really hard to get used to having a brake on your handlebar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been riding snowmobiles, quads, and they both have brakes on the handlebar, but when I'm on a dirt bike, it just doesn't feel right. So it's I'm getting used to it. It's got a little one-finger clutch that works good. I'm getting used to it, and I, like I said, I am pushing it, but I do, you know, I do try and slow down and not fall too many times because it's pretty tough to get me back upright.
Mm-hmm.
And so whoever I'm riding with, I try to. It seems like they get more wore out from the day picking me up than they do actually riding.
Now, is this something where we're going to see you at X Games?
I don't know. It would be a lot of fun, I think. am I going to go and do it?
Yeah, you will. Come on.
I don't know.
yeah, sure.
It looked like a lot of fun. The guys that were riding there this year, it looked like they had a lot of fun out there. And I think it would just be fun to go to California and maybe ride the week before and get to ride with some guys that are in the same situation as myself. I think that would probably be the most fun, is just being able to hang out with them and ride with them.
Yeah, no, that sounds pretty cool. And I think if anybody can do it, it's you. How's the recovery going? I know you saw some progress, a little while ago. There's that picture in Racer X of you walking down the hallway at Yamaha. And how's the recovery going? You still seeing some improvements?
Yeah, I think so. It's really small improvements. It's like when you're going as fast as you can on a track, and you're just trying to get that little bit more. It's really hard to do. It seemed like it was. Things were advancing at a rather, I wouldn't say a quick rate, maybe mm-hmm. a normal rate, and it just seems like it's sort of plateaued, but I think there's still little bits of improvement here and there. I have leg braces, and I try to get in them every day and just walk around the house or work at my workbench or just try to get up as much as I can. And it's just hard to work because you don't have much balance, and you always have your hands are always full with canes or forearm crutches.
Mm-hmm.
So you really can't do a lot of physical work when you're upright standing. You always have to be sort of hanging on to something to really lift something. You got to be on something solid. But it seems like there's little bits here that I could do a little bit easier now than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, to really say that it's improving, it's a really, really small, slow process. I feel like the feeling is still creeping down my body, just the little tingling sensations that I feel. You know, some days it seems like, I could feel a little bit further, a little bit better, and other days it just seems like there's nothing. So it's you really have to be in tune to, you know, like I was thinking of a Sharpie or a tattoo. I'd really have to line the spot and know where the feeling is and then come back to it a month or two later and see if it's gone any further. But I think it is moving. It's just at a really, really slow rate.
Hmm, interesting. Now, I'd heard that the time of your crash, your supermoto crash that caused your injury, that cage you had around your back was part of the problem. Is that true or not?
Well, it's hard to say.
Okay.
In theory, in engineering, when you have a flexible structure and you make it solid at one point, the weakest points are at each end.
Right.
So, I'm sure my back would have broke somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's the weakest place, was above or below my injury. And it broke right above my previous injury. Did that make it an easier place so that it didn't break any higher? I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
I mean, it could have been a good thing or it could have been a bad thing, you know, but I don't know. You know, that's something you really can't tell. I mean, I'm sure my back was a little bit weaker than it was before because it was fused.
Yep.
So, I mean, in theory, yes, it probably contributed the second time.
Do you mind talking about the actual crash or?
No, not at all.
Take me through it. I've heard so a few different versions from some guys that were there. Never really found out exactly what happened. Did you hit an oil slick? Was that the deal?
Yeah. Well, there was, I guess it'd be turn one, NASCAR turn one.
Yeah.
They had a chicane coming down the straightaway about halfway down or so. And it was the fastest part of the track. Fifth gear, just going down really, really fast. It was really, I enjoyed it. It was really fun. It was a really fun part of the track for me. And I ride at Loudon with a couple of the Wood Brothers. They run the Penguin Racing School up there.
Yep.
And they really pushed me on high-speed stuff riding up there at Loudon. So this was a similar corner to what you'd find at a road course. And it was just really enjoyable for me to try and push it through that corner. And I felt comfortable with the corner and everything. And I saw like little bits of fluids on the in the dirt section, and I was just thinking it was fuel from, you know, when you hit a face of a jump or something. You know, if you don't have your lines running into a catch can, you'll get, you know, fluids on the face of the jumps.
Yeah.
So I think I was just thinking that that's what it was, but. There was a guy that fell the lap before me, and he just wasn't going as fast, so he just sort of slid up and didn't really hit the wall. I just thought it was the first lap. I figured he's on cold tires, and he fell, and he slid up to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he came about 10 feet or so from it. And maybe it was the two laps later, I came into the corner and just laid it down, and, you know, the front end tucked, and... It sort of got hung up a little bit on the pavement. So now my front end tucked, and my back end started to come around behind me. So now I'm sliding up, you know, between the bike and the wall, and my leg was underneath it. It was kind of stuck. I was trying to get separated from the bike, but within that, you know, 2 seconds time, I wasn't able to just free myself from the bike, and I slid up and hit the wall. There were some hay bales there, but it wasn't quite enough for the impact that I had hit in the wall. So, you know, I hit the wall, bounced off the wall, and the first thing you do in my thousands of crashes that I've had throughout my career is, you know, you wiggle everything in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And I just knew right then and there, I said, that was it. I said, I'm done. You know, so it was pretty, you know, it was definitely an emotional moment for me, just thinking to myself, that's it, you know, and it's amazing the stuff that goes through your head in a short amount of time of the things that you're going to, you know, that I was going to miss. And, you know, I just, for the thought of walking my daughter down the aisle for, you know, getting married, I think that was the biggest, along with, like, dancing or something with my wife. I was just, like, those were the two biggest things that came, you know, to mind at the time. And riding, of course, I've been doing it my whole life. And just a lot of stuff just hit me right then and there. And, It was tough, you know. It was really hard there, and you know, for a while there, I'm thinking to myself, "Oh, I'm going to get through this. You know, I'm going to come back from this. I'm going to get through this." And you know, when you're in the hospital and you're so dependent on other people, you're just like, how do you get through this? How, you know, it sucks so bad. You know, it's horrible. You know, it just really sucks. So. You know, you kind of get through day by day, and eventually you're starting to do more things on your own, and it's just starting to get better. You know, you're just starting to be able to do stuff on your own. You're starting to, you know, just little things, you know, whether it's put your socks on by yourself and stuff like that. And it's just everything just starts getting better and better, and it's frustrating. You know, it's frustrating to this day now. I mean, it's been a little over 2 years, and I still get frustrated, you know, when I have to. We just went camping this weekend, and my wife and my brother-in-law and my sister-in-law, they're doing all the work. I feel like I can't. There's so many things I want to do to be able to help. It's hard for me to just sit back and watch, and I think it's hard for them to watch me struggle. So there's a point of it's a point of me letting them go ahead and do extra work, and then there's also their side of it where I need to let them watch me struggle, because it feels good for me to do things, to be a part, to feel like being a part of stuff.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, it's an ongoing battle, and I just try and wake up every day and get through the day. You know, that's, you know, try to make it hopefully the next the every day is better than the last.
Yeah, and from what I know of you, you weren't exactly a couch potato. You know, you were a very active guy on your farm, and you did a lot of things every day. So makes it even harder for a guy like that. Like myself, I mean, I watch a lot of TV, so but for you, not so much.
It's been good as far as that goes, because my father, he spent a lot of time adapting my equipment, my farm tractors, mm-hmm. hand controls, my bulldozer, my excavator, my Rhino, everything I have is set up to where I can drive it. Just about. I have a couple of pieces of equipment that are just so old that mm-hmm. they would just takes too much effort to set them up. So I just get another driver for them. But I'm able to do quite a bit, which I'm very fortunate for.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, looking on the bright side, you're not in a chair 100% like, hey, Doug, this is it. You're never getting out of this chair. I guess there's a bright side to that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, there's always, it could always be worse. And I'm thankful that where I got hurt, I'm still able to do a little bit more than other people. Not quite as much as some, but mm-hmm. more than others. And everybody who's out there who's got an injury always wants just a little bit more. You know, if they had a little bit more movement or a little bit of feeling or a little bit this or a little bit of that, everybody's looking for that, and so am I. And I think most people out there, too, they're kind of thankful, thinking to themselves, you know, it could be worse. You know, because when you go to the hospital and you see some people in there and you're just thinking to yourself, man, I'm lucky. And
yeah.
It's a tough thing to say, but there's people out there who are in a similar situation as myself say that, you know, as bad as it is sometimes, you know, they're lucky. You know, they're still here, they're still alive. So,
yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your career a little bit. For the most part, when did you first start realizing that, like, you were pretty fast and you can make a living racing a motorcycle? When did that happen? Was it? I'm kind of not familiar with your amateur years. The first time I knew you was the DGY ride, really. And so was it before then? Or were you starting to whoop up on everybody in the NESE?
No, it probably wasn't until after my 94 championship.
Really?
Believe it or not. Yeah, I had won the East Coast, won the 125. Because I've seen a lot of guys go from the 125 class to the, well, let's see, the lights class to the the motocross class, and not really make that step. So I always knew that I had that extra step to make, and I didn't really know if I could do it. There wasn't many positions available, and if you weren't winning or had a shot at winning, you didn't have a good ride. So even in 95, when I had won my first Supercross, won a national, I felt like I was still on the border of making it or breaking it. So
really?
But I felt pretty strong, and I guess in 95, I'd say, end of 94, 95, I kind of figured I could make a living at it.
Now, back when you first hit the pro scene, it was still pretty Southern California-centric, and I'm wondering how you got that DGY ride. How did that happen? Were you you didn't win Loretta's, from what I understand, right?
No. I think my best finish was maybe a seventh or something there. I'm not sure. What I did was I went and chased the nationals, and just in my van, you know, low budget racing, just would go down to Florida and, you know, try to, when I graduated high school, I went down to Florida, kind of spent the winter down there. And I raced here in New England, got pretty fast. New England has a really good series mm-hmm. where they run 20 minutes plus two laps. It's a pretty long schedule, and you race in the rain, you race in the mud, you race in the snow. Whatever was there, you went and raced at. So I felt pretty strong physically and mentally for the nationals. They've kind of suited my style, a long race, and I just started chasing the nationals, and I did pretty well with it. I'm not sure where DGY picked me up. I'm not, you know, somewhere maybe in I don't know, top 15 I think nationally, and probably top 10 Supercross. And then I went ahead and DGY gave me my first, like, national sponsorship and chased the series, the 125 East Coast and 125 Nationals for 2 years.
What was it like when you won Hangtown in the mud? I mean, was it just, did you go to the line and thinking that you could win? I mean, you obviously you probably were a pretty good mud sand rider. And take me through that race.
You know, I'll say that I am a good mud rider, but it's not like I ever liked the mud.
Right.
The only thing I liked about the mud is how most other people hated it. So it didn't, I had raced in it so much, it didn't, I kind of knew the situation and prepare, and, you know, I was comfortable with it. Going to Hangtown, no, I had no idea that I could, that I was going to win it, or, you know, even had a chance at it. But I got a pretty decent start, maybe top five start or whatever, and the guys kind of fell in front of me and blew up, and you know, I had to battle a few little battles here and there, and, you know, the hay bales rushing down the river that we had to cross every lap, twice a lap. But it was a survival race, and, you know, kind of stay up and stay clean, and I was the one that, you know, kind of made it that day, and it was a really, you know, it was just such a fun thing, and you know, when a race is miserable and horrible and grueling and nasty, if you win it, it's not bad. So for us, it wasn't bad. We had a really good weekend.
Yeah, and then you and Dowdy standing on the podiums looking at each other going, can you believe this?
I know. It's just, you know, John's probably the reason why I went so fast nationally is just when I never had a break. I could never go to a race and just say, "Oh, I'm gonna win this today." It was always nationally. You had the national guys to contend with, and whenever the nationals weren't going on, I'd go up to a local race, and, you know, John Dowd was always there, and just never had a break. Him and I went back and forth in New England all, you know, for our whole career.
Yeah, I was gonna touch on that later, but maybe we'll bring that up now. What was there a rivalry between you two guys? Did it ever get heated? I mean, How was your two relationship when you guys were coming up and then at your peak as factory guys?
There probably was a little bit of a rivalry before we knew each other, because we didn't really know each other. We started racing against each other, and, you know, I had my group of guys that I would hang out with and we'd all go to the races with, and he had his group of guys that he would all go to the races with, and we didn't really interact at the races when we first started racing against each other. And there wasn't, I don't think there was really much of a rivalry, but I think we were the two fastest guys at the time, and I think it sort of, there was a rivalry in the air, but between John and I, we never really had one. And then we became friends, and it was just a matter of just helping each other out in a way, by going fast and not giving up when we were practicing, you know, riding hard for 30 minutes. We would be 25 minutes into a moto, both wanting to stop, but, he was always out there, and I was always out there, so we couldn't stop when we were, you know, I didn't want to stop before him, he didn't want to stop before me, and we just, you know, we would, you know, practice really hard during the week and get ready for the races, and it was just, he became a really good riding and training partner.
Yeah. Would you guys ride together when you were a Honda and he was factory Yamaha? I mean, would that kind of go on, or when you?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. We'd ride together. It didn't matter. If he was in California or something, we rode together quite a bit.
Oh, that's cool. So you're riding for DGY. You do pretty good in the series. Honda. Do you remember when Honda approached you? Do you remember what race it was, or how that happened?
Oh, boy. Yeah, Steel City, I think.
Oh, okay. So they waited to the end?
Yeah, I think Dave Arnold asked me to come to, he had a little meeting in his hotel room. And asked me if I wanted to ride for them. And at the time, Kawasaki had also offered me a contract. They were interested in hiring me for the year. And I actually said to myself, well, Mike Kudrowski rode for both teams. He rode for Team Kawasaki and Team Honda.
Right.
And so I called him up and said, hey, Mike, you know, if you don't mind, I'd like to just ask you about the two teams and what you thought. And what stuck in my mind was, if you want to win, go with Honda. You know, so even if they weren't offering me as much money,
yeah,
which was the case, they said, you know, he pretty much, I wanted to win. So that's where I went at the time. You know, that's where what I wanted to do, and so that's where I went.
And yeah, I think that bike was pretty good, winning you two outdoor national titles, huh?
Yeah, the bike was great. The whole team was great. We had with Dave Arnold, Cliff White, and at the time it was Stanton, Jeremy, Steve Lampson, and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And we just had a good team. Everybody got along pretty well, and you know, just riding and practicing and testing, it was, for me, it opened up a whole new world, because I had been with DGY, and I think we probably went testing a couple times, maybe twice or something.
Right.
For Supercross, we went out once, and then Motocross, we went out once. You know, it wasn't a big deal, but when I went to Honda, there was, you know, 15 guys that were,
yeah,
you know, assigned to my bike. And myself, and it was just overwhelming. I was just like, wow, I better do good, you know, for all these people, not just myself. And it's not that Honda puts pressure on you or a factory ride puts pressure on you. It's just that you put pressure on yourself for all the people that are here trying to help you win.
Right, and putting in 100% effort, so you better, right?
Exactly.
95, you're on fire. You won Dallas in the mud, I believe. You were winning the outdoor series until the infamous Henry Leap at Bud's Creek. I'm not sure. I think you were either in the points lead or you were second, right?
Yeah, I think I had just moved into the points lead.
Right. And, I mean, I know you've talked about that crash 100 times, but I guess take us through it one more time. What exactly happened?
That was just a fourth gear downhill. I say it's a G out. What it is, we were going down a hill, and then it slowly turns back up the hill, and you really mm-hmm. bottom out in the bottom of this hill. And there was a couple laps to go, and LaRocco wasn't that far ahead, so I was going to make a charge for him. And I made a little mistake up on top of the hill, so I was going to try and make up for that little mistake just by driving down the hill a little faster than I had in previous laps. And I just sort of landed hard, and my feet, you know, got hit some ruts and stuff, got dragged up, and they just got pulled off. So I was like laying on my belly on the motorcycle and, you know, giving it steady fourth gear throttle where I should have been slowing down. And I had a choice to either jump off the bike, you know, separate myself and jump off the bike, or try and pull myself to get back on the bike and just launch really far and you know, just jump, launch, landed.
Yeah. I don't know which option would have been better.
I don't know. I always said I was happy with what I had, because I was walking and I was pretty much 100%, you know, from there. So I was glad I stuck with what I did.
Yeah, for sure. I know McGrath told me one time it just looked like he got whiskey throttle, and you can see him in the video. He's looking over at you like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
So that was it for the 95 season. And amazingly, your contract with Honda, it didn't get renewed. What were the deal behind that? You weren't healthy, but were you a little bitter at them for not giving you another shot?
Yeah, I was. You'd always heard that stuff that happens with the guys at Honda that, I don't know, they just didn't want me back. I guess they didn't feel I could win again. And, you know, I went there with a pretty low offer just to go. I just wanted bonuses. I had low salary and high bonuses. They still didn't want to take it.
Were they worried that you weren't going to be 100% healthy, or was, as far as the injury was concerned, I mean, it wasn't iffy, right? You were going to race again.
I was going to race again, but was it iffy? It probably was iffy.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I could come back from that. that type of injury. I think it was iffy on their part.
Mm-hmm.
And
so, yeah, so you're a little bitter at Honda, and it was surprising to me as a fan that they didn't bring you back, you know, because I'd heard that you were coming back. By then, that was my first year on a circuit as a mechanic. So you get hired by Yamaha. What kind of – how did that deal come into place? Was it a pretty low money offer also, I would guess?
It was better than what I had approached. I think I actually approached Yamaha with the same deal mm-hmm. that I felt I was – I said, here's a low salary, high bonus, or just a regular salary, regular bonus. And I think they just went with, you know, kind of a regular salary, regular bonus type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And how that came about is, you know, right after I had that meeting with Honda, I was just a little frustrated with the management there. And I gave, actually, John Rosenseel, mm-hmm. he was the suspension guy at Yamaha for a long time. And I was friendly, I was, you know, still friends with him. He was actually one of the only guys, he was the first call I got when I won my national championship in my hotel room. It went back to the room and the light was flashing, and it was John R. saying congratulations on the championship. I had just won it from their rider, Jeff Emig.
Right.
And I gave John R. a call after the meeting. I said, John R., I said, you know, I just want to let you know that although, like you were saying, Honda is saying they were going to take me back, that it's not going to happen. And, you know, if there's anything there at Yamaha, just let, you know, keep me in mind. And he spoke with Keith McCarty and Larry Griffiths at the time, and Mike Guerra is always there. And I guess we got together. They just wanted me to see their doctor. And if the doctor said it was that I would be 100% again, then they would sign me. So went out, saw their doctor, and I think I signed shortly thereafter.
Now, you missed Supercross in 96, right? You sat out Supercross?
Let's see.
I think you came back maybe at the end.
96. No, I'm trying to think. 96, I think I did.
Did you do Supercross?
Oh, no, let's see. 96, 96. Yeah, 96 I sat out.
Right.
I came in at like round 12, 13 or something.
Right, and then how nice was it to win that moto at Washougal? That must have felt really good. I was there that day, and yeah, people were really happy for you. I think everybody in the pits was really happy for you.
Yeah, I tell you, the thought of retiring was close because I struggled so much.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I'd never get back to the conditioning and the speed where I was. And when I won that moto at Washougal, you know, just that taste of victory again was like, I'm back. You know, I'm here. You know, I want to keep doing this. You know, it was just that overwhelming. And like you said, the support that I had at Washougal was something that it was very overwhelming for me, because these people on the West Coast, you know, just way, you know, I live so far away from them. And I just felt like they were with me from when I crashed to that day. Like, I felt like they went through the struggles that I went through, because it seemed like they were as excited as I was that I won the race. And I wasn't a local guy, you know, or whatever. It was really overwhelming to see that type of support. And that, I don't know, just it was really great. And that's kind of why I went back there in 97 and rode the four-stroke to, I did like a little demo lap when I was coming back from my injury. And, cause I just, that does Washougal always be a special place. I mean, I have special things that happen at every race,
mm-hmm.
but that win at Washougal was really big in my career.
Yeah, it was cool. Now, you only had a 1-year deal then, I guess, huh? Only for 96? That was
yes.
it? And did you know about the four stroke in 96, or was it the next year when they told you about that, their possibility of riding that thing?
Well, it's always, you always do your contracts the year ahead, so at the end of 96, that's when Keith McCarty took me into his living room and asked me if I wanted to ride a four-stroke.
And you said?
And I pretty much just was like, I just struggled this whole year to come back from, you know, this from my injury. I feel like I'm coming back. Why do I want to step back and ride a bike that's never been, you know, it's not proven. It's
right.
You know, it didn't seem right at the time. And I said, this is a big decision. I'm going to think about it. And came home, told my wife, told some friends, family. And I was surprised at how supportive my family was and friends to try and go for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just do it. My whole thing was it was going to be a factory bike. And I think that was a big thing with my friends. Was it's a factory bike, you know.
It's a
full factory motorcycle. Wouldn't that be so cool to ride? And I thought about it, and I was like, yeah, you know, what can I lose? You know, maybe I don't do so well on it. You know, oh, well. Maybe it's going to be something that's going to be really awesome, and I'll be able to reap the benefits of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into it open-minded, and I went over to Japan later the year in 96 and rode it and fell in love with it. It was just, to me, in my career, whenever I rode a two-stroke, I was racing. Whenever I rode a four-stroke, I was playing around, doing wheelies, doing donuts,
right,
riding in the woods. I wasn't racing it. And then all of a sudden I jump on this four-stroke, and I was like, this is the funnest thing I've done in so long, because it was such an awesome bike, so much fun to ride. And it was kind of the best of both worlds. I was racing a fun bike.
Now, what happened in 97? Were you going to ride it in Supercross and something happened, or was the plan to always ride a two-stroke in Supercross?
The plan was always to ride a two-stroke.
Oh, okay.
At the time, the earlier four-strokes didn't have, I feel like they didn't have quite the power band that the new ones do.
Mm-hmm.
And in Supercross, you need a lot of power in an instant.
Yep.
When you're timing sections and skipping on, skipping off, like just doing stuff where you need a hard hit, you know, a lot of power all at once. That was something the four-stroke lacked in its early years, was a hard hitting. And I felt like it wouldn't be, I don't think the bike was going to be ready anyways.
Right.
So I think it was a mutual agreement to not ride it for Supercross.
I think looking back on your career, in 97, you come out, you're leading the Supercross series, I believe halfway, maybe a little bit more. Button lands on you. I think it was Button. Breaks your hand. Is that one title that you look at that might have got away from you?
One of the few.
Yeah. Because you were strong, you know. You were looking really good.
Yeah, I felt good. I felt like I had a chance. I mean, I think I was in the points leader, close to it. I was right around the top there. It was just, you know, it's something to happen, but if that didn't happen, Las Vegas wouldn't have happened.
Good.
You know,
that's
sure
true.
I wouldn't have been on a four-stroke there. So, you know, I didn't win the Supercross title, but I made history on a four-stroke and a Supercross.
Yeah, what was that like? Now, not to be Kreskin here, but honestly, I was in the pits, and I'm like, I called the victory. I'm like, look at this track. This is perfect for a four-stroke. And you were fast all day. And what was the decision behind racing it at the final Supercross? When was it made, and how did you go about that? And talk about the decision to ride it at Vegas.
Well, I was coming back because the outdoor season was coming up,
right,
and I was getting ready for the outdoor season. And Vegas was coming up, and I rode the bike on our Super Yamaha test track, and like you said, I didn't know that much about four strokes at the time for racing and stuff, but
mm-hmm.
the traction on hard, slippery stuff is unbeatable on a four stroke. And knowing Las Vegas, racing there in the past, knowing it's going to be a hard packed blue groove track, I said, you know, let's get a race up on the four stroke, you know, before we go and race the Nationals and run it at Vegas. And I think everybody was in agreement. You know, we had a few little issues, carburation issues,
mm-hmm.
That we dealt with very, very a lot. You know, just we really diligently, I guess, just struggled, and we worked on the carburetor issues well into the night, several days that week. And when we got everything figured out and went to the test track, everything was good, we're riding good, my mechanic and I and you know, everybody, most of the insiders in the test track at Yamaha knew the how capable the bike was on this certain situation. So when we went to the track and everything started going good, everything felt good, and you know, it was funny in the air in the pits. Kind of most guys were more towards the fact of it wasn't going to happen. You know, I can't believe you know, are you going to qualify? You know, am I even going to be able to qualify on the thing? So it was really kind of it was fun just trying to sort of prove people wrong and
right.
say that a four stroke can do well out there. And you know, after our first couple practices and then the heat race win, it's like, wow, we can win this thing. And away we went with the victory.
Now, I know from my experience at being at Yamaha and working on four strokes, the modern bikes, and I mean modern meaning 2003 and up, Supercross was tricky with those carburetors, the on-offs and everything. I don't want to say the word scary, but how much was that bike carburation-wise to jump on-offs and to land hard landings and to get that power there right away? Was that something you kind of had to ride around?
Yes, absolutely. You never knew what was going to happen exactly, what obstacle was going to cause
cough
things
and fart
to jump around or whatever. And we got a pretty good handle on it, like I said, just before the event. So it gave me a lot of confidence going into the race. And then it seemed like when the bike came into production, it seemed like it was they had gotten better with the issues.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, when you were working at Yamaha, you're trying to modify the bike and change cams and timing and valves and stuff, and that all plays a part on the jetting. And you have to kind of get everything right when, you know, so you try to avoid all that.
I know a few times Ferry was like, Henry's a hero for riding this thing on the Supi track, the early versions, you know?
Right, right.
So now you still have that works bike, right?
Yes, it's actually right now. It's in Ohio at the AMA Motorcycle Museum.
Oh yeah, cool. I one of my first jobs at Yamaha when I first got hired was destroying some old motors of yours from the 400, and man, those things were trick. They were trick.
That was the coolest thing about the bike, was just when I first got to Japan to see it, and just I saw the machine work on this bike and carbon fiber, and you know, there was not a production part on it. It seemed like it was just an amazing
swing arm. Was so cool. The swing arm was so trick.
An amazing piece of equipment.
Your debut at Gainesville in the outdoors didn't quite go the way you wanted. The old four stroke starting curse bit you there, but I mean, were you deterred at all? Did you know that this was the real deal?
Yeah. We knew that was the biggest, that was the biggest downfall. The four stroke was, man, when you stall it, they sure are tough to get going again. I mean, nowadays, that's nothing, you know. But back then, I mean, you can look at the L.A. tape of, I guess, 98 or whatever, when I was leading and, you know, stalled it there. And just, I don't know how many times I got passed or whatever. But
They're pretty good now. They've definitely worked out those bugs. But I can remember looking down at the pit at Gainesville and thinking, he can't start that thing. Look at it. He's kidding.
Yeah, well, that the down at the pit at Gainesville, that was a little different. They had that long tabletop. And everybody out there who's gone from a two-stroke to a four-stroke in the modern days, it's quite a bit different timing-wise. When you're doing a jump, it's different. You got a four stroke. It's not a hard hit. It doesn't really flatten out like a two stroke does. It's just a different type of power. And that jump was I think it was a 100-foot tabletop or something. It was really, really short landing, and I over jumped it and just sort of flat landed, and you know, I hurt my foot, and that was kind of, I don't even know if I raced that day. I was just too beat up from that. I think I skipped Daytona after that because I was hurt.
Did you? Oh, I thought you raced it and went like seven something or whatever. But
yeah, I don't know. That's something for the history books.
I know that the bike was white and then it was blue, and I heard the story behind that.
Yep.
Pretty funny deal. Yamaha Japan, I guess, was saying, or no, it was blue and then it was white. Yamaha Japan was saying, that's our works bike. You put white plastic on it. And so
exactly. That's basically it.
White plastic showed up. 98, you win the title on the bike. And I remember the 98 season. I don't remember you starting off really strong, but then as the season went on, man, you were the guy to beat later on. And I guess talk about that 98 championship year.
That was a lot of R&D and getting used to the bike and getting in shape, because riding a four-stroke, it was just so much physically. It was just so much tougher physically, because the bike had more power and just more spinning mass, and it was just when it bucked and went sideways, boy, it just really threw you. So it was physically it was a tough bike to ride. And I think as my conditioning got better and as I learned the four-stroke better, I just kept getting faster and faster and faster, and confidence in starting. You know, I've never gone up to the line saying, boy, I'm going to hole shot this race, you know. I never had that luxury that McGrath probably had his whole career of, I'm going to hole shot this, you know. I never felt that way until I got on that bike, and it's like, this thing just, especially a long start.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. It just, a long start, that thing would work really, really well.
And we had concrete back then, too, at a lot of races.
Yeah, so it was tricky. But yeah, I think getting used to the bike, getting in shape, and, you know, we had our issues, but we seemed to find them at the right times. You know, whether it be testing or in practice, we found some major issues, and luckily it just didn't happen at the races.
Yeah, no, definitely. Hey, I want to talk about one thing I wrote down on the bottom of the... I want to talk about that IV controversy with you when you were back at the Honda days. That was quite a deal. And what exactly were you suffering from that caused you to get on IV, and then now the rule is enacted? It's a Doug Henry rule now.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know about the rule.
Yeah, you can't get IVs anymore okay. On the day of a race. I'm sure none of it ever happens in those motorhomes. But anyways, you know, what was the deal with you on that? Because, you know, people were definitely saying, oh, he's not sick, he's just doing it for performance enhancing, and he doesn't need an IV. And so what exactly was it?
I'm gonna go back to... You know, we never really found out exactly what it was. I just suffered, you know, I guess it's kind of tough to say publicly, but I just, whatever I ate just went right through me. I just couldn't hold any vitamins or nutrients. For some reason, I'd eat, you know, and just go to the bathroom, and there goes all my nutrients before everything got broken down.
Right.
And I think it was nerves. I think it was a lot of... you know, just pressure and nerves that I put on myself. And I know that, I think Chad Reed's going through something, some sort of stomach things. I just had heard about it or whatever. But I was just, I felt like winning the 93 championship, 94, I had to defend it. You know, there's no place to go but down. And I just wanted to win it so bad, and I was training, and I was riding, and I would just, I'd just cramp up really, really bad. I just, my legs would just cramp, and it didn't matter. It didn't make a difference how much I drank or anything. I just, I was on a pretty strict diet. I tried all different things and couldn't really get it to work. And I finally met a guy in California, Lewis Wong, who trained triathletes and just trained a lot of people, just a regular doctor, but just wanted to find out what was wrong with me. And he just sort of did some blood tests while I was training and other stuff, and basically just gave me some supplements. You know, sodium was a big thing. I never put salt in any of my food. Didn't eat salty things, and one of the things was salt, sodium. I was just lacking sodium, and that's one of the electrolytes that I would just go right through my and I'd just start cramping up. So sodium, magnesium, zinc. And not really potassium, but I didn't have an issue with that. But the sodium and the zinc was something that was really magnesium. Sodium, magnesium, and zinc. Those were the three things I was really low on. And so I just started taking supplements with that and lots of them. And it got rid of my cramping. And I was able to ride without getting cramped up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. All right. Well, there we go. Finally.
Yeah.
That's something I've always wanted to know.
Yeah.
99, basically kind of a retirement tour for you. You stopped racing Supercross. You just did the Nationals with your number one plate. You and your wife drove the motorhome around. It was a good old time. I always thought, though, like 99, you came out at Troy and you just killed him. You went like 1-1, I remember, and it was a pretty unlikely victory, but you were dominant. And I remember thinking, why is this guy hanging it up? Why doesn't he keep riding? And so talk about the decision to just kind of make 99 the farewell tour.
For me, 99, I guess in 98, I won the national championship and kind of said, you know, I felt like I was just burnt out of traveling and racing, and mm-hmm. I just felt like I was done with it. I wanted to stay fresh and move on, and I went to snowmobile racing and played around with that and realized, wow, there's just as much traveling and loading up and packing and as there was with motocross. So I just kind of wanted to get away from the race, I mm-hmm. guess you'd say, just running, you know, constantly on the go. I was tired of the suitcase,
right?
You know, living out of that every week, and you know, not being home and being able to settle down for a little bit. So I decided that 99 was going to be the last year, and Troy is just a real fast open track, a nice 4-stroke track, and things just went well that day. But for me, you know, racing was just, I was just kind of tired of it, and I just felt like I couldn't put everything into it anymore.
Wow.
Just didn't feel like I could.
Because you probably could have stuck around and got some more paychecks. So it's admirable that you stopped.
Yeah, I just couldn't do that, though. I don't know what it is. Just, I wish I could. I wish I could have just gone out there and ride around fourth place, third, fifth, something like that, and just collected a paycheck. But I couldn't. I could not do that. I could never do that. I don't know. I just can't do it. I wish I could, because I'd still be racing probably now.
Yeah.
You know, I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, yeah. No, everybody could see your drive even when you started doing the Supermoto again, you know? It didn't take you long to pick it up once you started
doing
it.
Right, that was a lot of fun.
Who was your favorite teammate all those years? You've had a bunch.
Yeah, probably a real old guy. He was probably the best. Not Jeff Ward, but John Dowd.
John Dowd, yeah.
Even though Jeff was great. I've had a lot of teammates. I haven't had any teammates that I never got along with. I got along with all of them great.
Uh-huh.
Had fun with everybody. But John and I just clicked. I think we came from a lot of our roots were the same, and we just, you know, we were just similar, very similar, and love to ride.
You guys probably just looked at each other every day and was like, can you believe we're on factory Yamaha together?
Exactly. I can't believe they're paying us to do this.
Yeah, exactly. What do you attribute to the lack of top riders coming out of the NESC right now? It's been a little bit of a dry spell.
I don't know.
You know?
I haven't been to any of the races. I'm not sure. You know, I've always heard that there's some fast guys coming out and just getting hurt and not really getting anywhere. But
right. Because, man, for so many years, you know, I mean, even going back to, like, Pat Barton or LaRusso and you guys, I mean, Keith Johnson, there was always, you know, somebody in the mix.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think those guys are actually still winning.
Yeah, they are, actually.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm not sure why I don't follow. I feel bad, but I don't really follow it enough to know what the heck's going on out there.
Right. Now, as I said in the beginning, you were you're one of the top email requests that I get for this show, and as you probably know, you were so many people's favorite motocrosser ever, and you know, you have a huge loyal fan base no matter where you go. Why do you think that is? When you look back on your career, why do you think a guy from Connecticut was just so popular?
I don't know. I think maybe I relate to a lot of people out there. I didn't grow up thinking I was going to race motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up thinking I was going to be an auto mechanic or a machinist. And I said, let me, you know, I love racing motorcycles. I'm going to go try this. and took off, went out there, and went for it, and always said, hey, you know, I'm going to go, this is only going to be another year. You know, who knows how long this is only going to last, another year. I'm going to go for it as long as I can. And I just enjoyed it. I enjoyed racing. I enjoyed people, enjoyed fans. I was a fan. You know, I was a fan of racing. I stood at the fence at Southwick and cheered for guys when they'd come around and mm-hmm. go in there and get their autographs. And I was a fan, and I guess just I could kind of relate a little bit more to fans and just blue collar maybe, yeah. You know.
You're like, I'm just being myself.
Yeah, I really loved it. I really loved it, and I think people may have seen that I really enjoyed doing what I was doing, and I just, you know, I kind of just took a chance at all this, and I succeeded, just kind of got lucky. I found something that I really loved to do, and I was good at it.
Mm-hmm. Now, financially, how are you doing these days? All right? I mean, you put some money away from your racing career?
Yeah, I've tried to live within my means for my whole year, mm-hmm. you know, for all my racing career, and I just try to live within my budget, and you know, there were some fundraisers that were just really helped me out, because
right.
going through the changes that I had to endure, it really would have put a hurting on my savings. And to be able to build ramps, buy extra chairs, convert vehicles,
mm-hmm.
and make changes that make my life easier, it was easier doing it when I didn't have to just take it out of my savings at that point just then and there. Financially, I'm doing okay. My wife's working full time, so she's sort of bringing in some money and trying to keep us afloat a little bit.
Oh, good.
I think we're doing good. For everything that's going on out there, we're doing good. And you know, I definitely have to thank everybody for helping me out when I got hit pretty hard there.
Right. Now, do you follow today's racing at all? Are you on that Racer X online? How closely do you follow the Supercross Motocross?
Not very. I followed not very much at all. We don't have cable up here. We just, one of those things that I said, I'm not paying all this money every month for something that I'm not going to watch.
But, right.
So I'll go online and get results every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Or my friends will send me some emails and some video clips and stuff like that that I'll see. But I don't follow it, just kind of through word of mouth, mostly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Yamaha has always been there for you. I like that. You know, no matter what you've been doing, like you said, with a Rhino now and a WRZ you have, it's good to see Yamaha still. You and Keith, I know, are tight, so that's great.
Yeah, everyone there, I just feel like home. It's family, you know, for me. I've grown up riding Yamahas, you know, so many years in my career. I don't know, 17 years or something. Mm-hmm. I've been riding Yamahas. So it's just, they're really nice there. I just like it. I like everybody from the racing to advertising to management. They're just all down to earth.
Mm-hmm.
Just really, really good people. And I'm lucky that's where I ended up getting there, you know, getting into a factory ride and just making a connection with the four stroke with them and snowmobiling and just staying in contact with them and helping them out whatever way I can. And they help me out, you know, a ton, and they for sure made this transition easy on me. Giving me great contacts to talk to and deal with and always being there, just kind of always being there, checking up on me. You know,
right.
Keith McCarty calls me all the time just to say, hey, how you doing? You know, it's just I'm doing great, Keith. Thanks. You know, it's like, I thank you so much for everything you guys have done for me, you know.
Yeah, well, that's cool. Great. And, well, thank you for doing this. I appreciate it. This was, it's my pleasure to call you up. And, you know, people, like I said, people want to hear from you years
well,
later.
I want to thank, you know, I just want to thank you guys for just still calling me and realizing I'm still around. But I just, everybody who sent me letters and wrote and, you know, I know that the money is a great thing, but just the letters were really good. The little postcards that Yamaha had at the events, and it's a great thing for me to be able to pick up some when I'm having a crappy day or whatever, to pick up some postcards and just you know, read a little something about how I helped them out. At an event or whatever, whether it was an autograph or a T-shirt or something, it's going full circle now how they're able to help me out. So everybody that wrote to me, I'm just thanks for taking the time.
That's cool, and I know we're going to see you at Adaptive X, so I don't even got to worry about that. Come
All
on.
All right, we'll have to wait and see.
Oh, come on, we'll see you. All right, well, hey, Doug, thanks again for doing the Racer X podcast show. And I'll see you around at the races.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye.
All right. Bye.